gentlemen, please take your seats. The spotlight is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. I'm Mystery Matt, and you're listening to the Mystery Matt Spotlight Podcast. This evening, we are going to be covering remote viewing, also known as Project Stargate, if I'm not mistaken. This evening, I'm joined by Colleen, Nancy, Greg, and Detective Tuesday, if he'll behave himself. Otherwise, we're making sausage.
He's sound asleep. He's exhausted tonight.
He's out. I wanted to give a shout out to Mr. Mythos over on YouTube, where we got a lot of this information. He's really good with his research. I trust him entirely. For it all being, he does a lot of myth and that kind of stuff, but when it comes down to like government conspiracies and stuff, he does his research, I feel.
Oh, he does a massive amount of research. Like, he's put out so much stuff, and his research is impeccable, I think.
Yeah, so if you guys are interested in that kind of stuff, I definitely suggest going over and watching some of his stuff. Just tell him, Mystery Matt from the Spotlight sent you. I don't know him personally, but, he deserves some recognition. Anyways, so I think we said Colleen was starting out, since Colleen's got all the superness. Okay, so let me just explain what it is. First off, we'll go from ground zero, right? Remote viewing is the ability to see a location without actually physically going there. So think of like out of body meditation and astral projection kind of idea. Kinda. Did you? What?
So, like, I don't know. I look at that different than like clairvoyance.
They're all, I think, twined together. Like it is clairvoyance, but
because you don't actually leave, you just, it's more like it's being able to visualize and see.
But they're also saying how they like can push themselves off of things and float up higher and maneuver themselves around, which would say that they are there in at least an astral form at some point.
Yeah, I think you broke my brain again.
Yeah. Yeah, don't even try me, Nancy.
It's considered part of parapsychology.
Yeah, the whole big bubble, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
And how much of it is true? Well, that's for you to decide, but yeah. Essentially, that's what it is. So originally, they were giving them things like, where is Doug? And the guy would, close his eyes and try and concentrate on where Doug is and then describe all the stuff around him and all that kind of stuff. The part I don't understand is when they get into the, oh, here's a set of coordinates. You're not allowed to look at a map. What do you see? That part is where it gets iffy, I would say.
So I'll just say, when I go into this, please, if the others want to jump in at any point with their information, please just raise your hands to do so, please.
You got me too.
And I said the others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm definitely other.
This one was really weird. It was interesting when I went to go research it, because everything that would come up, I will watch videos, but I actually prefer to read. So I prefer to go in and read things and go from there. What I found was, as I was researching it, the amount of sites out there that offered courses in remote viewing.
Yep.
The number of places that, advertise, we'll teach you how to remote view, we'll unlock your potential, we'll do... That one blew me away, especially as I started reading more and more about Project Stargate and what went on during it. I was like, we're still doing this? That kind of got me. So what happened, during the height of the Cold War in the 70s, a couple scientists were working at the Sanford Research Institute. And I'm sorry, my notes are a little bit discombobulated. I had the flu.
We all died.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody just had a crapshoot of a week. Yeah.
So they were headed by physicists Russell Targ and Harold Potroff. And they were actually parapsychology researchers.
First,
working, yes, working at the Sanford Research Institute in California. And they started to do research into psychics and clairvoyance. And the CIA got interested in this because the Russians were apparently also working on these things. So in the 70s, they started this project and it was absolutely clouded in secrecy and conspiracies. No one talked about it. They wanted a new weapon against the enemies, which was mind reading. So they started to look for people who claimed to have ESP. And these people were recruited by the CIA, the Army, and the military intelligence. Now, a lot of money was being spent on this in the U.S. and
dump
in the Soviet.
Load.
Huge amounts were being spent
on
this.
Apparently the reason they started the whole thing was because they had an inkling that not only did the Soviets already start doing it, but that they were like 5 years ahead.
Yes. Yeah. There was, I mean, this was just after the moon race, the lunar landing race and everything.
It was all during the Cold War.
Everything. Yeah. So it started at the research lab in California in the late 70s. It later was moved to Maryland to an army base. The CIA, they worked out of the Sanford Institute for many years, but it ended in the late 70s and it moved to Fort Meade in Maryland. At that point, the CIA withdrew from it and the Army funded it. The Army became involved in the research into remote viewing. And it was funded by the Defense Intelligence Agency. This was in the late 70s. It continued, Congress continued to provide funds for this for almost 20 years, despite that the Pentagon denied that any money was being spent on psychic research.
Yeah, don't tell no one.
Yeah, so for like almost 20 years, they kept throwing money at the research. But they kept saying, no, we're not spending anything on psychics.
Sounds
we're not.
Very much like Stranger Things.
I haven't seen Stranger Things, sorry.
Oh, geez.
Just you, Nancy.
Just me.
I've seen like the first season of Stranger Things and then part of the second. I don't think I finished the second.
Did you see where like it showed her in the school? And they had all the kids that had all the different psychic abilities like telekinesis and teleporting and all that?
Nope.
And okay, you need to watch.
Oh, I gotta go back to
because
Stranger
it's
Things
like
now.
it's like a government, a hidden government.
Well, I knew they were leaning into the government dealy thing with 11.
Yeah. Is that 11? Yes. Yeah, they're just numbered.
Speaking of which, Millie Bobby Brown, who played 11,
yeah,
wow, she grew up quick.
Yeah,
like she's into modeling now. She's doing like
she's like in her early 20s.
Is she already?
Yeah. Well, because when you think about it. If she was actually, you know, like 11 when it started, we're watching it while she would have been like 12, 13, because they have to tape it, record it, and then edit and all the special effects and everything together. So we're like a year and a half behind.
Of her actual age, yeah.
So that's why, you know, like you're seeing her on the screen and she's 15 and really now she's 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Right? Sorry, Colleen.
That's okay. I just
like, yeah, you need to watch it if you like that kind of thing. You need to watch it.
Yeah.
I don't really.
We can throw in opinion tangents. It's all good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good times.
I'm sorry. No
bother. Have you seen it?
No, wasn't. I'm not interested in it. Like, oh. I mean, it just didn't interest me. I don't know why.
Greg's seen it.
And Greg, I'm sorry, TBI. I have no idea where thing? I was. I've lost it now. I have no idea. What was I? What did I say?
Hi.
You were talking about the government was saying they weren't throwing money at the thing.
Okay,
the
was that where I was at? Okay, yes. All right, thank you. Sorry. I completely lost
track.
I missed
the Stranger Things.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. The interesting thing, so the original two researchers, Russell Targ and Harold Potroff, there were actually later some big questions about, I believe it was, it's Potroff. Potthoff was a Scientologist, and part of the reason why he started this research...
Didn't know that.
So part of the reason why he started this research was he wanted to prove some of the key tenets of Scientology. And that later, as investigators started looking through remote viewing and what it was, that actually threw it even more into question, was because of his background with Scientology and what he was actually trying to accomplish. He used Scientology a lot in coming up with some of the ideas of the experiments and things like that to use. So that kind of discredited. But in
Didn't he separate from Scientology later on down the line?
Potthuff? I don't know. I actually didn't find any information on that. Maybe he did.
Because I think the video that you put out, Mythos? Mr. Mythos?
Yeah.
I'm saying it right? He did, in part of his research, it stated that he did separate from Scientology because he wanted to be more credible. Creditable.
Yes. Because when it started being investigated in 95, he lost a lot of credibility with the fact of his Scientology and how it was involved in this.
Because that's when Scientology started coming
in. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So in the late 70s, it was moved to Maryland, to Fort Meade, and was taken over by a Defense Intelligence Agency. I think I said that. It kept going. In 1995 was when kind of shit hit the fan with it. The CIA released a report that acknowledged their work with remote viewing and psychics for the intelligence and for gathering intelligence and for military purposes. It was at this time that the program officially ended, as it was decided by the evaluators that it failed to provide any actionable intelligence information. This was big. They actually declassified some of the information then, and it was released, and they admitted they'd done it. That was pretty big that they admitted to remote viewing. But it wasn't until 2017 that around 12 million pages were declassified regarding this and that all the information fully came out.
12 million pages?
12 million declassified pages from the CIA.
Yippers.
Yeah, in 2017. I did not read all of them. Thank you very much.
No?
Well, why not?
Just skimmed it.
Did you? I don't know. I got
just
bored.
Just skimmed it?
Just skimmed it.
A little light reading.
So in 78, it was established a secret army unit in Fort Meade, and the final name was decided, actually many years later, in 91, it was called Project Stargate. Before that, the earlier ones were Scanate, Sunstreak, Stargate, Gondola Wish. There were tons of different names, and it was finally decided upon Project Stargate. But it was the exact same project. It's not like it changed.
Yeah, they just, you know, gave it a cooler name.
And what they were hoping for is they wanted people to be able to describe things in other locations to help give them military intelligence, all sorts of things like that. The big thing that they started using, especially under Stargate, was map coordinates. The coordinates would be provided by the CIA, and in hopes that the remote viewers could be able to tell them what was at that coordinate. They did actually have some successes, but it was said that there were far too many failures and only a few successes.
Yeah, they said that the amount of information they got, there were correct information, but there was also a fair amount of incorrect information.
Yes. So it employed more than 20 psychics over the years. Now, that's actually, when you consider this thing ran for over 20 years and it employed over 20 psychics, that's not a huge number of people, actually.
No, but 20 years, that's a long time.
Where the sad thing is, many of these psychics actually ended up in psychiatric hospitals or ended up extremely obsessed with conspiracy theories and you know, things like, you know, wearing tin hats type thing. It's interesting.
What do you think the government would do with someone they want to start being quiet about things that they were doing?
That was my thought, because many of them, I guess, did end up pretty bad off. They didn't have good lives after doing this.
Yeah.
And it was a very hard job.
Hi, Nancy.
If you don't know, if you open up your psychic abilities and you don't know how to harness them and use them, I can quite honestly tell you will go mad. You will go absolutely mad.
Yeah.
And many of these people, they recruited people from weird areas. Like one of the people they recruited was actually a memory champion, and they thought they could unlock his psychic potential. And so he did it for a few years near the end. But a lot of the others, there were some pretty big, there were a couple main people. The biggest person is Ingo Swann.
Why? How tall was he?
He started out with the program back when it was at Sanford. And he was, in fact, one of the people who, originated the program kind of came up with the rules as to how to do it, the ideas, the guidelines, and he kept with it for years.
He was essentially the blueprint they went by.
Yeah, he was their very first guy. And his approach was called coordinate remote viewing, CRV, which is what they later focused on during Project Stargate. And in 73, he worked with SRI, with the main scientists, on the idea of viewing planets, actually. And he was asked to view Jupiter, and the results were astonishing. He was able to describe things not widely known, including the presence of an unknown, at that time, ring around it. All of his findings were later confirmed by NASA's Pioneer 10 satellite years later.
Yep.
So he was actually, he was good.
Yeah.
He was able to see numerous things that they were able later to verify.
He was like in the 1% that had like a 98 percentile.
Yes. Now, while working with the CIA later on Stargate, he was able to provide accurate... Yeah, it is Stargate. Okay. He was able to provide accurate descriptions of a secret base in Russia suspected of creating nuclear weapons, which he confirmed. And later satellite imagery actually confirmed his findings. And his CRV practice, so the coordinate remote viewing, systematically would gather information through visual and sensory impressions. It would establish a target and then gather the information about it. And Swan became the consultant for this, for the government. He was kind of like the head viewer. So he was one of the big guys in it. Another one was called Remote Viewer 001. Joseph McGonagall. I keep wanting to say McGonagall, but I'm sorry, that's the Harry Potter fan in me. Joseph McMoneagle. And he's kind of an odd one. Like, he was a retired army vet. He did view a number of things, but McMoneagle. Okay, there you go. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you. All right.
I'm trying to think of how that would be pronounced.
He claimed his accuracy was anywhere from 5% to 95%. So that's a 90% difference. That's a variable in there. So, but at different times, he'd speak to somebody and he'd say, "Oh, I have about 5% accuracy." Then he'd say, "I have a 95% accuracy." So, kind of a little bit off.
Finish your thought and then come to me.
Okay. He predicted that in the early 2000s, we would have a vaccine for AIDS. There would be a science for the soul. So we'd actually be able to identify the soul by science. And that there would be, I'm sorry, this one gets me, a temporary tattoo craze that would replace clothing.
No.
Can we all show up wearing pasties? Well, I work from home, so
yeah, Greg and I are all right. We both
I
work
wanted
from home.
To touch on accuracy. So when you're practicing like your intuition stuff and your intuition tests, if I am well rested, focused, and meditated beforehand, I am at an 80% to 85% accuracy. If I am tired, distracted, did not meditate, am not focused, fuck, I'm done. Forget it.
Does being circumcised shorten my antenna?
We're talking about a different antenna.
I'm going to ignore that one.
That would fall under TMI.
Okay. You channel your way, so I'll channel mine.
Can I tell you to fuck right off?
If you want to.
You have to be in the right mindset in order to do this. So like even when you do readings, I have to be in the right mindset. If someone will say to me, "Hey, can you bring your cards and read me at work?" No, I cannot. My mind is at work. I am in my work mode. I'm wearing my work hat and I cannot read while I'm at work.
No.
So that's the thing. When you're doing stuff like intuition thing, and that's big, that's why that made sense to me.
All right.
excuse me.
Does when that he was mean
like, you know, 5% to the 95%,
okay,
that totally made sense because there are some times where I am spot on and other times people are looking at me like,
yeah, what was that crap?
Exactly.
It's not a switch that you can flick.
It is
not a light switch.
Because that's, you have other things going on in your brain.
Yeah. So now, despite the whole tattoo thing. Oh, sorry.
That was funny.
That was good.
If you show up fully covered in tattoos with no clothes, I'm turning around and going home. I love you, but like, Halloween I don't need costume. To see all of you.
I think we should all do that costume. For Halloween costumes. Uh-huh. Do it as a team.
Yeah. Everybody comes
in. There'll be no mystery then.
Well,
except
no.
Under the temporary tattoos. I don't want anyone to go blind. Thank you.
We're not in our 20s. Things sag now.
Oh, God. Don't go there. Tattoos.
Okay, so I have a...
She's laughing.
She's making gagging sounds.
Sorry, you didn't introduce that Sarah was attributing from the bedroom with the door closed.
With the gagging sounds. Okay, Greg, what were you going to say?
Okay, so I this is might be a little bit like remote viewing, but I had an experience myself, so I just wanted to give it like a shot here. I mean, like, it may not be anything, but it could be something. But when I was younger, I used to always like have these maybe like daydreams and stuff like that, and it would just be kind of like reality. And there's this where I grew up, I lived close by to a plaza, and this is just kind of weird, but I mean, like, there was like a LCBO store, and there was like a grocery store and everything, and I had it pictured in my mind that the LCBO store was going to move over to a different area and expand and be a bigger one, and eventually it did do that. And the same thing about the grocery store and everything, it expanded as well, like it, and it was just like something that I thought of like was gonna happen, and eventually it did. I don't know if that's I don't think it's really remote viewing or anything like that, but it's kind of weird, isn't it? Or
a little
psychic
bit,
I don't know,
a little bit on the same principle of like maybe possible psychic on that one, because I mean they did have to use psychics for this.
Yeah
Now I will say that McMoneagle, he actually did have some very good successes. He helped locate the hostages in Iran. He led agents to a shortwave radio that was concealed inside a pocket calculator of a suspected KGB agent.
That's where I left that thing.
So, I mean, these people, they did have, there were actual successes. I think I have a list of them. So, identified spies in South Africa in 1980. They located Soviet weapons and tech. This was a nuclear sub they found in 1979. Found the lost Scud missiles in the first Gulf War.
Oh, yeah. You're going to want to keep track of those.
Yeah. And found plutonium in North Korea in 1994. That was one of the last ones they did. Now,
environmental cleanup.
McGonigal. Apparently, he participated in over 450 missions between the years of 78 and 84. That's a lot. Yeah. 450. I found information that there were something like 504 missions that were investigated for the official investigation into remote viewing. So if he was in 450, he was in most of them.
He was in most of them.
Yeah. And it is... The investigations that were, like, there were a number of people involved in these. Some were kind of dicey. Edwin May joined in 1975 as a consultant and at the Sanford Institute, and he continued on after it became Project Stargate. He acted as the principal investigator, the judge, and the gatekeeper for the program. Now, I think the judge is the person who takes a look at the images they come up with and decides whether or not this is usable. But so this one man acted as those three things, which was a definite conflict of interest. A massive conflict of interest. He has refused to release the names of the oversight committee. And he also will not release the transcripts of all of their missions for examinations independently. And at one point, he controlled 70% of the funds for the program and 85% of the data.
Wow.
This one man.
This was the 70s though, right?
He kept going until 95. He started in 75 and kept going until it ended in 95.
I would say if it was the 70s, everybody was high. So, I mean, that would
count
for some of it.
But, you know, and when the CIA, like, they also on this got, they tried to get Uri Geller into this. And Uri Geller ended up, I guess he didn't join it or whatever, but he was considered as one of the psychics at one point.
Apparently he didn't want to join because he felt he was already doing his own thing well enough. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. The early, like, when you look in the scientific examinations for remote viewing, it gets a little bit more difficult to take a look at. The early results seem promising, but the tests all had inherent flaws that made the findings suspect. Later scientists that evaluated them declared that there were a lack of controls and precautions to rule out fraud. And later tests that were done under controlled conditions failed to provide positive results. See, the CIA and I guess different oversight committees got a number of people in to investigate remote viewing to find out, is this really working? And what they found was that, number one, they weren't given the data. The original scientists and the people who ran the program would not release the information to them, even though the government told them they had to. And that's kind of unheard of in the scientific community. When you have experiments to prove something, you will willingly share your data with independent people so they can validate your proof and make sure that it is true.
Yeah.
But they would not hand over the transcripts to find out. So when they had a remote viewer in trying to see a site, what was actually said to this person? Were there any hints given? Was anything done? And so a number of people were actually involved in investigating. And there were David Marks and Richard Kaufman were psychologists who tried to replicate the tests. They worked on it later. Michael Shermer, who was a founding publisher of Skeptic magazine, investigated remote viewing as part of one of the committees. Then the Ray Hyman was the big one.
Hyman.
I knew that was, I was just going to say, please don't say anything about that name, but whatever.
Grubeck.
You kind of have to.
I know.
Oh, Hyman.
Long enough.
I know. Why would I expect that? Anyway, Ray Hyman is a psychologist, and he's the founder of the Skeptics Toolbox, which is a conference held annually to debunk claims of paranormal or whatever. He is a huge critic of parapsychology and has actually worked for years with James Randi. Randi is famous for the Million Dollar Challenge. I think it was on TV for a number of years, trying to find one genuine psychic, somebody who had genuine abilities. They'd get $1 million. Nobody ever won the money.
No, they didn't.
Yeah. So Ray Hyman was in charge of conducting the review for the government in 1995. And claims the issue is that the positive tests rely on the experiments not being able to be explained by normal means. They lack any explanation or theory as to what to control or ignore. So it's like you say, oh, yes, these people can remote view, but you can only say that because you can't explain it by any other means, which actually does make sense to me. But his big thing with them was that as he looks through the transcripts, and when the transcripts were finally released to him of the viewings, what they'd find was that details were given to the remote viewers. They'd be told about, oh yeah, well, you're seeing a place that you've been to before. And they draw dozens of images, but yet only a couple would be chosen, and the ones that didn't hit were just discarded. They'd choose a couple images. So there was quite a bit of hindsight bias and confirmation bias.
It was also getting debunked because there was no way to verify the view location unless you checked it some other way. And then therefore, why would you even try to remote view it if you still had to go there to see it in the first place?
Yeah.
So a lot of that was getting in the way.
Now, the one thing, though, that Hyman did state
Hyman.
was that he felt that there were enough hits on it. There were the effects, so the positive effects from remote viewing were too large and consistent to be dismissed as statistical flukes, but he will not acknowledge that that there was an existence of anomalous condition was established. So he'd say the tests were not run properly. They needed much better controls. But he did agree there were good results, but he couldn't explain them. He said they weren't statistically likely, but anyway.
Yeah, the problem with it is that they couldn't, like, every day wasn't a good work day. If that makes sense. You'd have one day where he was batting 1,000 and then the next day he'll get nothing.
Over the years, there have been many people who've tried to replicate the tests. The big ones were David Marks and Richard Kaufman, psychologists. And they spent years trying to obtain the full transcripts from the original SRI researchers. They finally got them. They got them from one of the participants. And they found that there were so many extraneous clues given to the subjects that could aid in identification. These included dates, times, places that were visited before. They were called sensory clues. And so when they replicated the tests without doing any of these, they had no positive results. When they replicated the tests giving these clues, they found that regular everyday students that they gave them to could actually remote view, could actually get positive results.
Or is it just positive guessing?
That's what their test showed, was that because they'd given all these clues, an average person could
piece together what's
could be
going
able to piece
on.
Together. Yeah. And then all you draw is you draw a straight line and a little bit of a circle, and oh, all of a sudden it looks like a building with a dome. Oh, that might be a church, or that might be. So
it's like, oh, I see a circle. Oh, is it a tractor wheel? Yeah, it's a tractor wheel. Well, what color is the tractor? Well, there's two colors for tractor. It's either really going to be green or red, usually.
Yeah.
You know, so then you have a 50% chance there. And you know,
and most of Project Stargate's information was looked at a later date. So it was done and then examined later after they'd actually found something. So that's the confirmation bias. It's like, oh, they told us that that there was a big tall building here, and we got there and there was a big tall building nearby, so yes, what they told us is correct. There was a lot of confirmation bias and a lot of hindsight bias involved in it. There's also a pretty big feeling that the participants of the project went back and altered all their records and altered dates and times on things in order to show positive results, because that was the only way they get their money.
Hmm. Which would explain why it was canceled in 95.
That was one of the reasons behind it, is that the main researchers of it, the people who were investigating it, felt that there was far too much fraud going on in terms of the records were not proper. Things weren't being kept well. There was too much going on. So in 1995, it was done. And since then, so many tests have been carried out trying to replicate it and get the same type of results, and they haven't been able to get that type of results again. So the question that, or the conclusion people come to, or the researchers come to, is that the tests were flawed. There were not enough controls established so that the people couldn't figure out what they were seeing.
And they also weren't repeatable.
Yeah.
There was, you know, like I said before, each day wasn't the same amount of results. You'd have great stuff one day and then garbage the next, you know. So in the scientific community, if you can't repeat an experiment and have it come out exactly the same, then it's seen as hooey. You know, it's
an experiment has
malarkey,
to be repeatable.
Poppycock.
Yeah. And it has to be able, the other thing, the SRI experiments in the early days of the 70s, nothing was peer reviewed. They never submitted their information to others to have the test peer reviewed, because generally scientific studies, you need to submit it to a peer panel. They decide, okay, yes, the test was done under proper controls. You've taken away all these variables. You've done this. It is a proper test. We will accept the results. They never did that.
As soon as you release a paper, all the peers in that industry, like say you're doing, you know, quantum physics or whatever, you release a paper on quantum physics, everybody's on top of it, because they either want to see if you're truthful or they want to poke a hole in it. Because if they can get recognition for the theory that they're working on over yours, then that's a thing, but they would have to prove yours wrong first.
And you have to describe your full methodology, all of your variables. You've got to describe everything you did in it. And that was the problem with them initial researchers, is they didn't do that.
Hypothesis, structure, you know.
Well, how did they make sure to make that their process, psychics could not, were not given any extraneous information? How did they make sure that the psychics had never been to the place before? How did they make sure? And they didn't.
Well, there's too many variables for it. Like, you can't control everything. Like in a scientific experiment, you want to make sure that you have control over most of the variables so that you know the outcome. Is that going to be positive or negative? But how do you control somebody's brain and what they're seeing? Like, how do you take out all the variables for that? Like, that part was what I was having a hard time understanding. Like, how do you do that?
So the later tests that have been done by psychologists in the last 20, 30 years, what they've done is they've made sure to investigate the people who they're researching or who are in the study, and they choose places that those people have never been to. And then the administrator of the remote viewing test does not speak to the remote viewer. So they cannot give any clues as to what they're looking. The only thing they'll give is, here are your map coordinates. This is your map coordinate. That is it. They will not give any more clues. They will not chit chat. There will be nothing. They take a lot of those variables away of making sure that the person has never been there and that no extraneous information is given. Those are the big ones.
Okay. So if you say to me, you give me coordinates.
Yep.
And I'm a visual person. So in my head, I'm going to visualize a map.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to find the coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
And because how long have globes been around?
You're not allowed to have a map in front of you. You're not allowed to have your head. Yeah, but you would have to have an eidetic memory to have all the longitude, latitude, time, and I think that's it.
Yeah, like if I gave you a coordinate for a jungle in Vietnam somewhere, but you don't know it's a jungle, you'd have to know that that coordinate hit at that exact spot in the jungle in Vietnam. Otherwise, it's just a number to you. So that was the thing, is that you can't look at a map. You can't see where the coordinate is. You're just given a set of numbers, and you have to focus on those numbers and then come up with a visual from it. And unless you know your geography spot flipping on.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If somebody does know their geography on, and they are a visual person, in their mind, they'll be able to...
So that's not actually how it was explained, though. The way it was explained is that when they go to do this remote viewing, they're tapping in some sort of nexus or matrix of information that has the knowledge of everything. So you may not know the coordinates, but that knowledge base does. And because you're tapping into it, it'll take you to that area because it understands the coordinates.
So do you mean like when they were talking about using people as like beacons?
Yes.
Okay. That I had a really hard time wrapping my head around.
So yeah. So
you're like tapping into somebody else's brain.
You know, no, it's more so like, you know how you can feel people's presence.
Yes.
It's that, but on 5G.
Yeah, I had a really hard time wrapping my head around this. It did make sense, like, when I went through, because I watched the section, like, six times when he talked about the different, the six stages. Because I was like, I really want to fully understand. Did we talk about that yet?
I had it written down, but I didn't mention it.
Okay, so the six stages are, the number one was major gestalt. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah, close enough.
Which is like, it's something like unified. So it would be like, an example would be a land surrounded by water.
Yeah.
The second was sensory, so that the individual remote viewing would be able to experience the sensory, a sensory of what's happening, of what they're remote viewing. So if they were remote viewing like a beach, they could feel the sand,
yeah,
or they could feel the warmth.
Touch, taste, sound.
Yeah. The smell. Third is dimension, motion, and mobility.
That's where you can move around in the space. Yeah.
The fourth is quantitative aspects.
That's when you can start to count things.
Yep. The fifth was special qualitative aspects.
That's when you can tell me what color things are and
the specific the thing on the name of the building.
Yeah, there's a Coca-Cola machine out front of the Shell gas station. Yeah.
And six was significant analytical aspects. Which is like the specific descriptions, which was how many different kinds of Coke are in that Coke vending machine.
There was a bearded lady standing out front.
So here's the interesting thing. So here's what the official CIA handbook had the stages written down as. It's the same thing, but written.
How did you find that?
She stabbed a guy.
Google? Actually, I am. Sorry. I've been Google since Google was going to the library and pulling out like
Colleen's deep throat over here.
Sorry. So the CIA handbook had it listed as stage one, islands, mountains, and deserts, which was exactly what you said. Yeah. It's what I get a kick out of is the different wording, because the ones I got, it's so much harder to figure out what the wording freaking means, which is why I didn't mention it. Stage two, sites of quality sensory value.
Mr. Mythos for the win.
Exactly. Stage three, dimensional characteristics. Stage four, quantitative mental perceptions.
See, they're sounding, they're naming them all vaguely so that people don't fuck
stage
around.
Stage five, interrogation of qualitative mental perceptions.
Yeah, especially interrogative.
Stage six, three-dimensional elements. Like, that's why I didn't mention them, because seriously, I had no idea what the hell they were talking about. So yours made so much
and
more sense.
And this is why
I'm glad something I said made sense.
This is why I did the shout out to Mr. Yeah. Mythos at the starting, because he makes it so that you're not listening to the government bullcrap using their big loopy words and stuff like that. Like, the way Nancy had them written down is pretty much exactly how Mr. Mythos was saying them.
You can understand them.
But you can understand them, like, quantitative, you know, okay, I'm counting.
Yeah.
You know,
but even when we did demonology, his was the video. He did one on demonology, and so he was the one that I watched his video, and it made so much more sense. He combined everything in a way that I could follow, and then I was able to, like, stop, take notes, and then continue. And, like, yeah, I do really like the way that he does his research and the way he presents. I think the way he presents more, so.
Okay, I just got to give a shout out to him, because we haven't done a podcast on, but his Inner Earth series is unflippin' believable, and I think it's like 20 or 30 hours long. So,
well,
anyway.
We were meaning to get to that. It was part of a trilogy from last season, but, yeah, stuff happened, so it's been put back on the back burner again. Moving forward, so we are at 40 minutes. I wanted to ask each one of you if you could remote view, like, anywhere in the world, where would you, like, see, a lot of it is done in a meditative state, so you can just be, like, chilling in your bedroom, and where would you remote view to?
Bali.
Bali?
Mm-hmm.
Where's Bali?
Indonesia.
Indonesia. Why Bali?
So that is, like, bucket list for me. There is this resort that has a dock out into the water, and off the dock, like, there's little other side docks, and they have huts.
I've seen that.
And you have like a hammock that lays over the water, and you have your own butler, and you have a little private kitchen in this hut, but literally I could lay there in the hammock all day long and read and not be bothered.
Yeah.
And that is, yeah.
You know, the Wi-Fi is crap, though.
I don't need Wi-Fi if I have a book.
Okay.
Yeah. No one can get a hold of you if there's Wi-Fi.
No.
Exactly.
Right? No Wi-Fi, nobody gets a hold of you.
I got a hold of a buddy of mine at work the one time. I'm like, hey, man, you busy? He's like, no, not at all. I'm like, where are you? He's like, oh, I'm not in the office. Okay. Turns out he's on the other side of the world at a bar that's surrounded by an ocean. He's sitting there by himself smoking cigarettes and having a couple drinks. And, like, this is one of the most gorgeous beaches I've ever seen. And he just got bored and went. And he's still working. You know, he's doing things on his cell phone and stuff like that to work. Just nuts. Nuts. He's like, I'm going to order a beer now, so I'm going to let you go. Oh, okay. Have a good one. You know, didn't know you were on vacation. Sorry. He's like, no, I was bored anyway. Okay. I don't know how you can be bored in such a place.
I'm obviously in the wrong field.
Yeah. Yeah, you should get into technical support. Like Greg. Yeah, look at Greg here all in technical support. Hey, Greg, what would you go to or spy on or?
Spy on? My nice relaxing place is probably in Australia. Just, it's again, like Nancy, it's like a bucket list. It's pretty much number one on my bucket list. I've always wanted to go there. I could picture myself again going to the Golden Coast on a beach, a drink in my hand, watching the surfers surf. And, you know, me going after them afterwards. No, but, you know.
Anybody need mouth to mouth?
You know, something like that. I mean, that's the life, you know.
I think it's funny how you say relaxing and peaceful on the one island that's got more things that can kill you than any place else in the world. You know, I'm gonna. Yeah, I'm gonna go where the snakes are and the wall.
Where the giant spiders. That was my thought. I'm like, yeah. Me, I'm sorry. I'm not even going on Earth. If I can remote view, I think of what Ingo Swann did. I am going to go throughout the freaking universe. Like, so take me to the Horsehead Nebula, Orion's Belt. Like, yeah, I'm going to go out there.
So if I were to do it, it'd be along the same lines, but you use a different civilization a beacon.
God, yeah. Let's go for broke. Remote
view straight to the other civilization through the big beacon that all people...
Now, just for interest, and
doodads are giving
remote viewing hasn't stopped. The government, there are so many people who still do use it.
Yeah.
It stopped for military intelligence gathering practices.
So they say.
But it is actually commonly used for archaeology digs now.
I use it when I can't find my wallet.
Well, it's used for archaeology digs and also for investigations. They use remote, viewing is used for that.
Yes. To give them a better idea of where
to dig. Yes. That I found. So it's not complete. It's not discredited fully. It's just not used officially by the government or military that we know of.
And it's hard to record.
Right. But they use it for other purposes now, which isn't. So obviously there is something to it, that there is something there. And even some of the biggest skeptics did say, you know, we can't prove it. We can't disprove it, though. You know, it's not likely, but...
I want to do one on telekinesis. Like, be able to move things with your mind and stuff like that. But the evidence for that is even slimmer.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, yeah. What evidence? So many tricksters and...
What evidence?
Yeah, yeah.
So, on that, actually, there's a whole part of witchcraft.
You said whole.
Whole. Feels good on the whole.
On the whole.
Which is basically, you call it telekinesis, but it's when you can start manipulating you manipulate energy, basically, and there's a whole practice with it.
We see the one guy who can manipulate his own key and start stuff on fire?
No. I've seen people turn pages of books. I have seen people light a match, light the bowl, paper on fire. I have seen that, yes.
Now, it's interesting because I believe Randy's challenge is actually still open. Or no, it was open until a few years ago. He actually even increased it to like 2 million, I think. I might be wrong, okay? But finally closed it because after almost 50 years...
Nobody
was able to claim it, because the deal was is anybody could come forward and try to claim any source of psychic ability, be it from mind reading, telekinesis, pyrokinesis, anything. But you had to prove psychic ability.
But how do you prove that?
The thing is, Randy...
Oh, he had his tests.
You should watch them on YouTube. They are freaking amazing. They are Randy's nuts. $1 million challenge. Anyway, it was a group of Randy and then the other guy I mentioned. They're big skeptics, but they're also... Randy was a magician. So he could figure out, by using his magician skills or whatever... He could figure out, how do I create a test to make sure I remove whatever variables and to find how the person is actually doing this. And he would do that. He would create these tests. So somebody would come forward to get tested, and he would, okay, so you say you are or telekinetic and you can move the pages of a book. That's fine. Here you are. Here's your book. This is my book. I've already checked it. It has nothing on it. We are going to put you in a sealed room where there are no wind currents, and we are going to put a measurement meter in front of your mouth to find out, are you blowing? Yes, the guy's blowing. You know, it was amazing. I've watched a bunch of these things. They're all from the 70s. They're on YouTube. They are amazing to watch.
There was the one guy who was bending the spoon.
And yeah, Yuri Geller. Okay,
and he's like, now don't put the napkin over it.
Yeah, yeah. It would just be simple things. And what I always remember, it's weird with remote viewing. I like Columbo, okay? There was an episode of Columbo in the early mid-90s, and it actually was about a magician. It was about a man who was remote viewing for the government. The government was going to hire him, and a magician was able to prove how he had done it using the magician's tricks. And I always remember it as it was just, it stuck in my head as a young teen about this, how they figured out how to do the remote viewing and how they used magician tricks on it. It was just interesting.
Cool. Final thought, Nancy?
Well, okay. So there are a lot of people that that are psychics or mediums or whatnot, and they promote this, and this is what they do. But generally, like, I do readings for people, but generally when I, like, not everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find this with a lot of the community is not everybody knows that unless you want them to know.
Yeah.
And so when you're going on national television and doing mm-hmm. stuff, like, I know what I can do and I still wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Because there would be too much second guessing, and the minute you second guess, you're going to mess up.
Well, and that's what many psychics, clairvoyants, people with ESP have said, that no, they will not do Randy's Challenge because they can't perform on demand no. at any time possible. They have to be able to get into it, and it's too much stress to do it under the challenge. And it's also something they don't want to become a guinea pig.
Yep.
And so I understand why Randy's Challenge was never found, like they never, it was never paid out or whatever, because somebody who really does have the ability does not want to end up sitting in a lab being prodded by the government, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. I think we wrapped it up in a nice little bow. Yeah. Join us again next week for something completely different. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel, Mystery Matt with one T. I find it's easier if you put in Mystery Matt Plays, just to distinguish me from the guy who likes to open random boxes. Yay, creative. Yeah, you look up Mystery Matt and you get a guy opening up like surprise bags and stuff like that. It's like, buddy, make something creative. At least talk about something
worthwhile. I really like when I see videos of people that open up like unclaimed luggage. And, like, unclaimed mail, because that is kind of neat.
That is fun.
But, like, opening random bags, no.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, the other one that is kind of cool, I like watching the mystery boxes from the dark web. I'm sorry, those ones are funky.
Alrighty, you guys have a good week.